I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story, Newsroom Edition, where Guardian Australia's editors discuss the news of the week. For months now, there have been questions surrounding the slow rollout of Australia's COVID-19 vaccination program, as the government missed target after target.
Well, Victorians are waking up to the first day of the state's fourth lockdown as tough restrictions return.
Victoria's lockdown will be extended to at least early next week after government crisis talks last night.
And now, a new outbreak in Victoria has fuelled frustration about a lack of transparency and accountability.
One of the reasons, Minister, they're saying wait is because you and the Prime Minister told them that. You said there's no rush for weeks and weeks and weeks. You said
That's
there's
false.
No rush. We talked about it on this program.
That's false.
And it's not false. You said it on our program many times.
No, that's not something I have ever said.
Today, I'm talking to Editor-in-Chief Lenore Taylor and Head of News Mike Tisher about how the federal government got the vaccine rollout so wrong. It's Friday, the 4th of June. Good morning, Lenore.
Morning, Gabs.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Back in February on the Newsroom Edition, the three of us had a conversation about the vaccine rollout. And at the time, we talked about some initial teething problems, but we said, you know, let's give the government a chance to iron out the problems. Lenore, have they?
Well, you know, we're reasonable people, guys, you know, and we like to make sure that when the government's undertaking this very big, very complicated project, it's easy to heckle from the sidelines. So, you know, we took a reasonable approach. Mm. But I think to say with the best will in the world that it's being handled incredibly poorly and with an utterly baffling lack of urgency. That's the bit that just completely flummoxes me, that, you know, we had this ability because we'd contained the virus to roll out the vaccine and get to a position where we were sort of relatively protected without all the pain and misery that the rest of the world was suffering. And we just kind of dawdled along. I don't understand it.
And Mike, it seems to be a bit confusing about why. Like every step of the way, we're surprised that something the government promised hasn't happened. Why is there so much confusion around this rollout?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of confusion because it's not, there's not an obvious ideological reason for the way they've acted. There's not a kind of obvious political reason for the way they've acted. The federal government is obviously setting itself up in opposition to the states, but there's no obvious political gain in that. It's just a matter of competence, really. And so there's a lot to be gained, you would think, politically from them performing this rollout incredibly well.
They have one job.
Getting through to where they can go to the next election saying, you know, we did well during the pandemic, we reduced the number of cases to virtually zero, and then we rolled out the vaccine exceptionally well, and now we can open up to the world. But they have not.
It seems it started from the beginning. Like we were slow to do deals to secure a variety of vaccines. It seems like the government had put all their eggs in the basket of that Queensland vaccine that sort of fell over at the last minute, and AstraZeneca, where there were this rare risk of clotting that kind of complicated that a bit. Now, okay, they couldn't have foreseen that, but they could have had a greater variety of vaccines to hedge their bets. And then the rollout was supposed to happen primarily through GPs, but there was all these issues with supply and that didn't really work very well. Dates were supposed to be vaccinating the frontline workers, but they had problems with supply as well. So now, like, we've given out, what, 4.5 million doses or something, which according to our calculation means that we're running about 3.6 million doses behind schedule, even on the revised goal, which is that we'll all just get one dose by the end of the year. I mean, it's just, even if you credit the government for unforeseen things that have happened, it's bafflingly slow.
Mm. And the Liberal government has relied pretty heavily on private companies to both plan and execute their rollout strategy. What do we know about these contracts and how well they've been performing?
Well, that's one of the big issues here. We don't know much about the contracts and how well they've been performing because they're all opaque and they're all secret. So we know how much has been paid out and we know what companies that the money has been paid out to, but what the contracts require them to do, what the deliverables are, how they're delivering on them, how much each company has got, you know, in comparison to the other companies, we just don't know. There's a really appalling lack of transparency.
But it's not just about the private companies, though. It's also about the more general lack of urgency in the rollout, which goes to their rhetoric about how it's not a race.
It's not a race. It's not a competition. It's not a race. You've got to get it right. It's got to be safe. It's not a race. It's not a competition.
We've got plenty of time. We're at the front of the queue, et cetera, et cetera, which was, you know, goes back to the beginning of the year and beyond. And the failure to have an ad campaign on TV about how important it was for everyone to get vaccinated quickly and to provide enough vaccines to GPs and everyone else who needs to vaccinate them. I think the fact that when the Victorian outbreak occurred last week, that Victorians then suddenly did rush to get vaccinated shows that actually there is an appetite and willingness among people to get vaccinated when the impetus is there, which the government itself could have provided to a large extent. I mean, you don't want it to be because people are afraid of suddenly getting the virus.
Yeah, this outbreak has made everything seem more urgent, hasn't it?
I think perhaps the why this feels a bit different is because it's the first outbreak we've had, the first big outbreak we've had since the vaccine rollout was supposed to have been underway. And we've talked a lot before about how outbreaks were certain to happen if we didn't do something different with hotel quarantine. And some figures, University of Melbourne researchers have crunched some of the numbers on that that are published in The Conversation today, saying that we should expect an outbreak about 1.5 times every month because they just happen in hotel quarantine. There have been 4.9 failures per 1,000 positive cases in quarantine. So we've sort of known logically that it's going to happen periodically, that there will be an outbreak from hotel quarantine if no other quarantine system is put in place. But now it's actually happened. Everyone's saying, well, A, why aren't more people vaccinated? And B, why haven't we done something more urgently about providing a different system of hotel quarantine? Because as the same researchers point out, the economic costs of a lockdown like Victoria's undergoing now are actually more than it would have taken to set up something like Howard Springs in other states.
I think what the outbreak in Victoria has also focused us on again is aged care. Now, this is baffling, another baffling area of the vaccine, because we were told, weren't we, from the beginning, that aged care residents and workers were the priority.
We were. I have the press release from the 16th of February in which Greg Hunt said, tens of thousands of aged care residents in Australia will soon receive their first vaccine dose against COVID-19. The Australian government is ensuring those who are particularly vulnerable to the worst effects of the coronavirus receive the earliest protection, so priority is being given to the residential aged care facility staff and residents. It is anticipated that the rollout to aged care facilities will take approximately 6 weeks. That was on the 16th of February. It's now early June, and it's a great big mess. And there are still a significant number of aged care residents who haven't been vaccinated even twice. There's still a number of them that haven't been vaccinated the first time. And aged care workers is a complete schmozzle. So, and it's quite clear whose responsibility that is, because in the same press release, Richard Colbeck, the Minister for Senior Australians and Aged Care Services, said the Australian government is responsible for leading the implementation of the COVID-19 vaccination program in the aged care sector. So they set themselves a target and they accepted responsibility and then they just didn't do it.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Because it's, on the one hand, originally I was under the assumption that these four healthcare contractors who were going out into aged care centres would be vaccinating both residents and staff. It quickly turned out that they weren't. But do we know whether they were supposed to?
No, we don't. Initially, the government said that they would be vaccinating staff and residents. Then that was quietly dropped and they were only vaccinating residents, and they vaccinated staff when they had some vaccines left over, which is obviously problematic because for the staff member, you don't know if you're going to get one and certainly not if you're going to get a second one.
Mm.
One reason that was given for that change was that it might not be a good idea to vaccinate all the workers in one aged care facility at the same time if they all then got some sort of bad effect from the vaccine. The facility might be without a workforce, which is fine, but they didn't tell them that. Mm. So then the aged care workers were sort of not knowing that these teams were not going to show up. Then there was an idea that they might send in separate teams to vaccinate the workers, but that didn't happen either. Then there were supposed to be like pop-up vaccination hubs for workers. There were going to be 13 of them, but there's only three and they're only in Sydney. So it's like the plan, if there was one, has changed multiple times over the months without it ever being made clear to the workers that the plan was changing.
And the importance of this is obviously because we know from last year's outbreak, the terrible results of that in aged care in Victoria were that more than 650 people died in aged care homes. And the most common vectors were the staff, not obviously the residents don't come in and out of the nursing homes. It's the staff who are moving in and out, much more likely to transmit the virus. As David Spears on the ABC has pointed out, 84% of the outbreaks in Victorian residential aged care facilities last year it's believed that the first case was a staff member. So it's almost more important that the staff get vaccinated first than the residents, because they're the ones who are more likely to move it around the community and around other nursing homes.
And the truly appalling thing I thought this week was that the Minister, Richard Colbeck, didn't even know how many workers had been vaccinated. He didn't have the data. And then I think his department came back with some sort of data, but they had to get that by ringing around states and facilities. They hadn't compiled the data. I mean, this is the same bloke who last year couldn't remember how many aged care residents had died. So he sort of has a bit of a track record in not knowing basic facts about his own responsibilities.
I think Claire O'Neill asked him in Senate estimates, how do you still have a job? Was he able to answer?
What's the point of setting a target if you can't measure against it? You know, if you don't know what the answer is, then that target when they said everyone's going to be vaccinated by Easter is just words. It doesn't mean anything, because if they can't measure it, how do they even know?
We knew as the months progressed that this was a stuff up, because I know certainly Chris Norse on our staff was writing about it, writing story after story in April, in May. This isn't working. This system isn't working. It's not happening as they said it was. It's not happening as Plan B was supposed to happen. It was like this slowly unfolding disaster, which then, unfortunately, now there's an outbreak in Victoria and we're scrambling to try to make sure that it isn't a truly terrible disaster.
And aged care providers have been a little bit reluctant to be overly critical of the government in the past, but this week people were quoted in The Guardian as calling it a dog's breakfast and a shit show. Is this now moving on? Like, is the incredible frustration seeping out into the wider community about this rollout now?
I think there is a great deal of frustration with what appears to be attempts by the federal government to shift blame from themselves. So there was a suggestion, you know, that aged care facilities hadn't been willing to take the vaccination teams. And then we hear all these stories about, well, they didn't say when they were going to come, or they showed up on a day when they hadn't given warning, or, you know, that there were all these problems in implementation. There was a suggestion that aged care workers should be forced to have a vaccine, which by implication meant that their reluctance was the problem, when in fact there was this incredibly complicated and confusing messaging about the rollout. And there's not really much evidence that I can see that there's any reluctance among aged care workers to have vaccines. So I think the real anger is coming from this sort of attempts to pass the buck.
I mean, on the contrary, the workers have been telling us when they talk to us that how frustrated and angry they've been for weeks about how shambolic the rollout's been, from people who weren't just happened to be on a day off when they arrived to vaccinate the residents, so there was nothing, you know, they couldn't take advantage of any doses that were left over, and just confusion about when it was happening and what was happening. It's just because they don't want to either catch it themselves or feel like they're responsible for bringing it into the residents who they're looking after.
And they were the ones, you know, on the front line of the true horror during the first outbreak.
And some of the aged care workers have told us that they've got a first dose when the in-reach teams have come out, and they haven't been able to get their second dose. That's also a Commonwealth responsibility, surely, because their first doses sometimes weren't even recorded in their medical records.
Yeah, and then they've been told that they're kind of on their own to get their second dose. They have to go to their GPs, or they have to go to the pop-up hubs, which, as we know, are only so far, even though they were supposed to have all been available by May, now we're in the first week of June, and there are still only three, and they're all in Sydney, which is not much use to workers in Victoria, where the crisis is. So they've been just left hung out to dry with having one dose and having to fend for themselves.
And it is possible to get this right. I mean, I got my first dose out at the big hub out at Homebush in Sydney that's run by the state government. It's super efficient. And then you get a reminder about when your second dose is coming, and it's all done with sort of codes and QR codes where you check in. You're in and out of there in half an hour. It's like a massively efficient operation, which is vaccinating, I haven't got the numbers to hand, but like tens of thousands of people a day.
Mm.
So it can be done.
Mm. I went there too, Lenore, and I was amazed at the efficiency. And the rollout has picked up pace since these state government-run clinics, hubs started. Is it state governments saving the federal government yet again?
Well, you know, state governments are traditionally the branch of government that is responsible for the delivery of healthcare services. The federal government's responsibility for privately run aged care is sort of one particular thing. But the issue with the federal government is, in this case, has been that they've been responsible for securing and delivering supply. You know, personally, I think the more responsibilities the state governments take for this, the better off we're probably all going to be.
Mm. Mm.
And we've seen also when you talking about how possible it is, people have been tweeting out, particularly this week, data from other countries, from the UK particularly, showing how transparent their data is, how they've got very precise numbers and percentages of residents and workers in aged care who've been vaccinated, broken down by district and even ethnicity. And like, it's just, you know, if the UK can do it, okay, they have a more centralised health system than we do, but if they can do it, you feel like there's no reason why we can't either.
And, you know, harking back to a discussion we had a couple of weeks ago, I think this does go to transparency and accountability. And I think it would be in the government's own interest to be transparent and accountable. If we knew what the targets are and we knew who's responsible and we knew what was in those contracts with private providers, then if something went wrong, which it may well do in an undertaking this big, if there was a disruption to supply or if there was some, you know, unforeseen consequence of a vaccine and they were upfront about it, I think people would understand that. It's the lack of transparency, the lack of accountability, and the sort of constant attempt to fudge the figures or blame someone else that I think is getting people really, really mad.
I mean, the blame game was like really stark this week when Scott Morrison tried to blame Brendan Murphy for his "it's not a race" comments.
Mm. Which he said, you know, months and months ago and in a completely different context.
Can they rescue this now, Lenore?
Do you mean medically or politically?
I mean, I would hope they can rescue it medically. It seems like the state governments might do that. But, I mean, let's talk about politically. What can they do?
I think we're really at that point where people are starting to have big concerns about how it's being handled. So if the Victorian outbreak is brought under control and if the vaccination rollout really picks up speed now, and if, you know, we all do get a first dose by the end of the year, then, you know, probably by an election in the first part of next year, people might be in a more forgiving mood. But I think there's a political danger in this for the government because the sense, the understanding that they have had, I think, a negligent lack of urgency about this is pretty widespread.
Next, the most disgusting thing you've ever seen, and why I think Mike was a parrot in another life. So now is the time for what we can't get out of our head. Can I start?
Well, you're the host, so sure.
Well, because I really, really can't stop thinking about the New Zealand parrot, the world's only alpine parrot, which may have fled to the Alps to escape people. And I really can't stop thinking about it because it reminded me of Mike.
Mike, you better stick up yourself there.
I was going to say, let the record show that when Gabrielle first brought up this story, she said, "I saw this story and I immediately thought of you." And that's grossly unfair.
But to be fair, when we put it on Instagram, almost every comment was, "I love this parrot. This is my spirit animal. This parrot has the right idea." So I think you're in good company, Mike.
Well, that was not my reaction.
What could you not get out of your head this week?
So my very people-centred story that I couldn't get out of my head this week was the one about the tennis player Naomi Osaka, who quit the French Open after having said that she didn't want to attend the press conferences after games that are compulsory for all players. And I think there's so many aspects to this story, which is sort of why it appealed to me. It's it sort of goes to so many different currents in public life at the moment about the role of the mainstream media versus social media. It was initially the narrative was, oh, this kind of spoiled, extremely well-paid person can't even be bothered to front up to the press after every game. You know, that was mostly how it was reported initially. And then when she went more public about the extent of her depression and struggles with her mental health, I think the sympathy turned around much more towards her. But it sort of brought up all these issues of bullying of women, bullying of young women, and particularly women of colour, by a sort of mostly male, middle-aged press corps who think they're the main vector for news, when in fact celebrities and other people can communicate directly with their audiences now and don't really need them so much. And yeah, issues about how people deal with their mental health, and how there was a lot more empathy towards her than there would have been some years ago, I think. So needless to say, Piers Morgan was on the wrong side of that debate, as it had all the elements that made for a truly terrible take by some people, including him. But it was good to see that there was a lot more sympathetic response to her after she gave more details about her own struggles.
Mm. And Lenore, what can you not get out of your head?
I feel a little bit superficial after that very thoughtful contribution from people person Mike. But the thing I can't get out of my head is I literally can't get it out of my head, and in a bad way. It's a story about Murray cod that are eating the mice that are obviously very prevalent because of the mice plague, and genuine worries about the impact on the cod if the pesticides authority approves the new mouse poison that they're considering approving because of the mouse plague. But the story includes a video of a cod regurgitating several semi-digested mice. Mm. And once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And so I recommend the story because it's a really important issue, but please don't watch the video. You won't get it out of your head.
I actually almost vomited when I watched it, I've got to say, Lenore.
See, that's a bad note to end on.
No. Well, don't watch it. We're doing everyone a favour. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lenore.
Thanks, Gabs.
And thanks, Mike.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Gabs.
This episode was produced by Ryan Pemberton. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni and me, Gabrielle Jackson. Laura Murphy-Oates will be back with you on Monday. We'll see you then.